Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Championship Rounds. We are back after almost a 6 month hiatus, I think it is. We've managed to work out how to get this thing to go, and we're back on the podcasting trail. My name's Simon Head. Joining me is my fellow MMA scribe, Ralph Welch. Ralph, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, Simon, and may I take this opportunity just to say welcome back, and also congrats on the new gig at The Sun. It's great to see you front and centre in the MMA coverage in this country.
Lovely, mate. Yeah, thank you for that. It's proving good fun at the moment. As I say, we've only done one overseas trip so far, which was Krakow, which was great fun. We've got Berlin coming up. We've got UFC 189 in Vegas, and then straight after that, we've got Fight Night Glasgow, which is obviously Michael Bisping versus Talis Latis. We'll talk about that in a bit, actually. Just for anyone who hasn't listened to this podcast before, and it's a fair bet that most of you probably haven't. The way this works is we're going to have five topics, just like you have five rounds in a championship fight. Each topic, we'll basically chew over the biggest stories of the week, try and give a little bit of insight, a little bit of opinion, and try and tee a few things up going forward. So we'll kick things off with the first topic on our sheet. UFC 187 was an absolutely massive show at the weekend. Some people are calling it the best ever. I don't know if it was the best ever. It's certainly the best one in the last six to 12 months, I would say. Two championship fights on that card. Let's take a look at the main event first, Ralph. Daniel Cormier is now the undisputed light heavyweight champion. Would that be a correct terminology, undisputed?
Maybe in Daniel Cormier's household he's the undisputed champion, but I think everywhere else there is a huge shadow with a huge reach looming over him in the shape of John Jones. So I think to call him undisputed is not quite right, because everybody knows that John Jones will be coming back later this year. So the question now is how Daniel Cormier, for me, sets himself up. I was really, really impressed with what he did against Rumble Johnson. I actually expected it very much to go down that way. I don't know about you, Simon, but I just didn't feel that Rumble Johnson would have enough energy. He's got all that fast twitch muscle fibre. I didn't think his gas tank could last down the stretch, and it kind of proved that way, didn't it?
Yeah, I've got to hold my hands up. I thought Anthony Johnson was going to win that fight inside three rounds. I just thought Johnson's wrestling was good enough while he was fresh to give him enough opportunity to land clean on Cormier. And it was proved to a degree in the first round. He landed a couple of great shots on DC and knocked him down. And I think DC said himself in the post-fight press conference that was the first time he's ever been knocked down, even in training. Let alone a fight. So, you know, Rumble's got some serious punch power, but what DC did, and it was pretty obvious to see what his game plan was in that first round. He was all over him like a raincoat. As soon as he got within reach to get his hands on him, it wasn't even about doing damage really in the first round. It was all about making Rumble carry his considerable weight. I mean, this is a heavyweight cutting down to light heavyweight. DC is a big lump, and Rumble Johnson had to carry him around like a backpack for most of that fight, until obviously DC sapped him of his strength, took him down, smashed him up a bit, and then obviously got that submission. It was, as game plans go, he got it spot on. Obviously there was risk involved because he knew he was going to have to take a few shots to get close enough to get his hands on him. But as I say, I mean, I thought Johnson was probably going to take him out within two or three rounds. But no, credit to DC, he did the job, and you know, he was one very, very happy man afterwards.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things we have to point out about that performance. I mean, I think first and foremost, for Cormier to come back after the real battering he took against Jones, I mean, let's not forget, he was crying in the press conference afterwards. He was a broken man. So for him to bounce back from that and put the performance in that he did on Saturday was really a feat of exceptional mental strength. And I think that mental strength showed in those early moments against Johnson, because you know, my heart was in my mouth for him at times, because when Rumble landed that huge right hand, I thought, my goodness me, punch the clock, this one's done. But he showed so much guts to get going again, and then to sort of adjust and still keep going with his game plan, not to be put off, not to panic. And I think if you'd asked Johnson beforehand, what's your worst nightmare for this fight, Rumble, if everything was to go wrong, what would your worst nightmare be? He said, well, it'd be Daniel Cormier lying on top of me, not allowing me to move, me expending all my energy just to try and to get him off me. And that's unfortunately exactly what happened for Rumble. He's going to have to rebuild a bit, because the risk is that people will see a weakness there that they'll try and exploit now, because Cormier's shown the blueprint on how to beat him at 205. So he's going to have to adjust. And then the big question is, Simon, when does this rematch with John Jones take place?
Well, it's all in the hands of the courts, and you know whether Jones gets a custodial sentence or not for his involvement in that, or alleged involvement in that incident. I just don't know. I think all things being equal, and if you know things get tied up and it's not too serious a sentence handed down to him, then you could see this happening. If Madison Square Garden were to happen at the end of the year, you could see DC versus John Jones. I mean, John Jones on a New York card would make a whole lot of sense. I think he's from Endicott, New York anyway. So, you know, that would be an absolute no-brainer. And, you know, I know the UFC are looking to turn that show, assuming that the sport gets legalized over there in New York. I think, you know, they're going to look at two, maybe three title fights. I would expect to see, if all options were possible, I think I would expect to see John Jones fighting for a title on that card. I would expect to see Chris Weidman defending his title on that card, and I would expect Ronda Rousey are probably thrown in there for good measure as well. I think we'll be looking at a real blockbuster event.
Looking at a 6-hour card if you're going to put that many fights on there, Simon.
Well, you never know, and a certain Mr. Brooks may be out of training by then. You never know. A Mr. CM Punk may be ready for his debut by then. So, you know, it all comes together. But the thing, and for anyone who has listened to me and Ralph sort of spouting forth on this podcast before, will know that there's a bit of a recurring theme when we get together over a microphone and start yakking about this sport. It's all about how fighters promote themselves. Obviously, the skills that they hone in the gym, we see them on a weekly basis when they get in the octagon and fight for the UFC. But the other, and it is an art, is the art of promotion. And obviously, you know, some people will roll their eyes and think, oh, pro wrestling this, pro wrestling that. But it is a vital part of any aspiring fighter's armory, in my opinion. And the ones who are good at it, it's no surprise they're the ones that tend to be making the big money. So, and if you look at what Daniel Cormier did after that fight, he has absolutely nailed it, because he's managed to bag himself not one, but two fights. He's got himself, he's got John Jones. He's got John Jones on the back burner for when he sorts his, you know what, out. When all that's done, when he's sorted his business out, John Jones comes back. Daniel Cormier has already sweetened the pot. You know, it's bubbling away nicely for when he comes back. But obviously, that's not going to happen in the immediate future. He needs a bout before then. So what does he do? He shouts out and starts to have a pop at Ryan Bader in the post-fight press conference, who's in the room. And Bader, who is a pretty placid individual from what I can make out, he's not the sort of guy to sort of upset the apple cart. Before we know it, he was stood up at the day as well, and he was jawing away in Cormier's face. And for a minute there, I thought Dave Scholler was going to end up having a repeat of the Jones DC brawl that we had earlier, was it end of last year? It was, I think. So you could see Scholler beginning to flex a little bit. So I thought it was quite funny. But yeah, Daniel Cormier has bagged himself two fights. The man knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to promote himself. And as UFC champions go, I think the UFC will be delighted that they've got a guy as articulate, as intelligent, and as media savvy as Daniel Cormier holding their light heavyweight belt.
Absolutely. And I just want to say about Ryan Bader, kudos for him for getting involved in this kind of thing, because this is a big money fight for him if he gets Cormier. Cormier will certainly see this as nothing more than a keep busy fight, because he believes he's a level above Ryan. I'm a really big Ryan Bader fan. I really admire what he does in the octagon. I know that there are some people who like to see, you know, they like to see their fighters kind of flip flop and fly all over the octagon. And Ryan Bader's not that type of guy. But I have tremendous admiration for his style of fighting. And if anything, I'd like to see him embrace that a little bit more. I don't want to hear him saying, I'm going to give exciting fights, or I'm going to do this and that. I'd rather Ryan Bader just came out and said, look, this is what I do. I grind people into the dirt. Beat me if you can. I think that's good enough for me. That'll sell me on a fight with Cormier. And I really admired the fact that they both got into it. I saw a little bit of a mixed response on Twitter, but there were a lot more people talking about Ryan Bader on Saturday than there were on Friday. So that's good business for him.
Absolutely. And it's, as you say, it's a big jump up for Bader. There's an argument that perhaps he hasn't had that breakthrough win at the very top level. But because of the way that the light heavyweight division has panned out, you know, there, it looks like there's an opportunity there. The fact that he was matched up with Cormier for the New Orleans card, and obviously that broke down because Cormier got bumped up to the 187 event. You know, Cormier's got that rivalry brewing now with Ryan Bader, and that you know, there's now a viable proposition in that matchup now. A word very quickly for the odd one out in all of this, which is Alexander Gustafsson, who, for my money, is still right up there. You know, obviously Anthony Johnson absolutely blitzed him in Sweden. But I think when Alexander Gustafsson comes back, we're going to see him at another level. And it'd be really interesting to see how the UFC handle him going forward. The light heavyweight division went a bit stale a couple or 3 years ago. It seems to have picked up. Jones obviously has gone through and has started ripping through everybody. And we've got that GSP effect now. Jones has been knocked off the top through matters outside the octagon. And it seems to have revitalized the guys just underneath him. And we've seen it in the welterweight division. And that's obviously kicking along nicely. And it's happening again with the light heavyweight division. I think it's going to be exciting times for the 205ers. Moving on to the other big title fight at 187. And in my opinion, this was the main event. It should have been the main event. Chris Weidman was the only guy on that fight card with a world championship belt in his hands at the start of the weekend. I think he should have been headlining that card. He took on Vitor Belfort, a noticeably smaller Vitor Belfort, it has to be said, and soaked up absolutely everything the Brazilian could give him in the first 90 seconds of that fight. And it was almost as if to say, have you finished? Right, now it's my turn. And then he took him down and smashed him. Absolutely smashed him. It was barely competitive. Once Weidman got his hands on him, he absolutely had his way with him. It was a fantastic dominant display. And, you know, he really is for me that one of the best champions the UFC has. Perhaps he didn't get the credit he deserved before that fight, Ralph, but surely now's the time for him to get the credit that he deserves.
I have to say, Simon, I've never understood the people who didn't give Chris Weidman credit, because there's two things about this. There's the Anderson Silva win first up. Now, I remember way back when you were at BT Sport and I was doing bits and pieces for BT, I remember writing after Weidman beat Silva first time out that Chris Weidman didn't get lucky in that fight. What happened was Anderson Silva got old. Anderson Silva didn't do anything different in that fight than he'd been doing earlier in his career. And people who saw some of the farcical fights way back in the day against the likes of Damian Maia and that sort, they'll know that that's what Silva did. But the difference in that fight was, and it happens overnight in a fighter's career, they get a split second slower. His reactions were that split second slower. The force of nature collided with Chris Weidman there. He hit him, and I thought he was a worthy winner in that fight in particular. The second fight, I mean, that was an interpretation, really. Was that pure bad luck? I mean, you could argue, well, Chris Weidman deliberately tried to block that kick and do silver damage in the meantime, which is exactly what happened. So I always felt that anyone who had an asterisk over those wins over Anderson Silva was quite frankly delusional, because I've really been on this Weidman hype train since day one. I thought he really is an incredible specimen. And for me, he's one of those people that really personifies where we are with mixed martial artists in 2015, in that it's not like it was 10 years ago, Simon, as you know, when someone had one talent, they had one really special weapon, if you like, that they used constantly. These guys now, this new breed of athletes, they are all round tremendous fighters in every area. They don't really have an obvious weakness. And when I look at Chris Weidman and I look at him against anyone else at 185 pounds, there isn't anyone there that I think, yep, he's got a big edge over Weidman. So for me, He reigns supreme, and I don't understand why anyone wouldn't give him credit now.
Yeah, the Anderson Silva stuff, I mean, there's no getting around the fact that both those finishes were somewhat out of the ordinary. You know, Anderson Silva, everyone is used to him sort of holding his hands down, sort of waving his chin around and all this sort of stuff and taunting a little bit. But as you say, Weidman knew how to close the distance just enough to land the shots. And he did, you know, that was Weidman's ring craft, basically made that happen. Let's not forget, he dominated the fight up to that point, and even more so in the second fight. You know, he was having his way with Silva in that second fight as well. Obviously, the way it finished wasn't how either of them would have wanted. I mean, Silva, if he was going to lose, that would not have been how he would have chosen to lose, that's for sure. And for Weidman, he would have wanted to have beaten him clean with a more orthodox knockout, or just sort of grinding out a clear decision victory. But it doesn't cover up the fact that for the time between the start of the fight and the moment that those freakish incidents happened, Chris Weidman was bossing both those contests. And as you say, he's got an all round game. He really is. I think you got Ronda Rousey, obviously, is like the poster girl for the UFC. There's an argument for saying that Chris Weidman is the poster boy for the UFC, because he ticks every single box. You know, he's the sort of guy that if you've got a TV interview to do, you know, it might be a difficult TV interview, someone who wants to have a little pop at the sport. So you want someone in there who's going to keep their head, who knows the sport inside out, who's very respectful and will convey themselves in a very professional way. Chris Weidman is absolutely the best guy for the job. You know, I think as a champion, he's got absolutely everything there. The big question for him now is who's next. Jacare Souza wants a piece of him. I know he's just come out of surgery, but we're told that he's ready to go. Not so sure about that. But surely it's got to be Luke Rockhold. I think, you know, Luke Rockhold has really come on strong in the last 12 months or so, after that loss to Vitor Belfort. And for me, him versus Chris Weidman, I think, is a potential fight of the year candidate. I think they're very well matched. They're different enough in styles for it to be interesting, but they're also absolutely top draw in each aspect of the game. And I think that's one they want for Madison Square Garden. The big question for the UFC now is, what do they do with both guys between now and then? And I think that's probably why they haven't come out and said Rockhold's next, because he might not be. So they might be just sort of trying to put a few pieces in place to get both those guys to Madison Square Garden in December. But it's a long time for both men to be inactive. I mean, how do you see it?
Well, I think that's a really good point, Simon, because if you've got one criticism over Chris Weidman, it's just that we haven't really seen enough of him in the last 2 or 3 years. So I'm really hesitant to have a 7-month break before we see him again. I completely agree. I am 100% on board with Rockhold as the next fight. I think that is fascinating. And I think out of this group of challenges, I think Rockhold is the outstanding candidate. And I think he, like Weidman, is another one in that breed of great, great technicians in all the areas. But it's a tough call for the UFC. I mean, with the injury situation the way it is, do you risk not having him in the octagon for 7 months and then possibly gets a month before December and he's injured again? I mean, sometimes there's a lot of merit in striking while the iron's hot and trying to push the pace while you can. I think Weidman wants to be more active. I'll be surprised if he says stick me on the shelf for pretty much the rest of 2015. I would hope they can find a solution where we see Chris Weidman more regularly, because I think that's maybe the one thing that has held him back a little bit in terms of the spotlight and perhaps not getting the credit he deserves. So for me, I hope they sort something out for a bit sooner rather than later. I hope the fight is Rockhold. If that's at Madison Square Garden or anywhere else, it doesn't really matter to me. They can put it in my backyard. I'll certainly be watching.
What's the seating capacity like in your backyard these days? Is it any good?
It's about 3.5, so you've got to queue early.
Okay.
And my youngest daughter is guaranteed the half seat. So, yeah, we're down to 3 if we're honest, Simon.
Right. I think probably the best scenario here is going to be for the pair of them to meet late summer, early autumn in Vegas. If the fight is in any way competitive, i.e. if it's not a complete blowout for one over the other, then you do the rematch at MSG. I think that's got to be the way, you know. I don't think you can give anybody else the title shot over Luke Rockhold. He deserves it. He's the top guy. I think, as you say, that fight has to be made. And I think the quality of that fight may well just lead itself naturally into a rematch. And everybody loves a good rematch. And a good rematch on a massive card in Chris Weidman's hometown, it serves itself quite nicely. When the fight happens, and I'm pretty sure, you know, we'll see it at least once this year. As I say, I think it's fight of the year. Fight of the year material. Speaking of which, fight of the year material, if for some reason you did not see Andrei Arlovsky versus Travis Brown, or you know somebody who didn't see Andrei Arlovsky versus Travis Brown, get them in front of a telly to watch it. It is the fight of the year so far. I don't see any doubt in that. And I know Mike Goldberg at one point turned to Joe Rogan and said, "We've got ourselves a favourite fight of all time, partner," I think he said. And you know, you could almost hear them high-fiving each other. It was quite something. It was an amazing, amazing fight, and brilliant performance from Arlovsky, who's rolled back the years and all of a sudden he looks like a contender again.
Well, I mean, you're only ever two wins away from being a contender in the heavyweight division. I mean, that's really down to the mathematics, that basically there aren't that many people at 250 pounds walking the earth who can contest a fight to that degree of ability within the octagon. So I thought it was absolutely incredible, Simon. You know me, I love a storyline, and I think the storyline of what Andrei Arlovsky has achieved is absolutely incredible. I mean, when people, there were a lot of people that really raised an eyebrow when he was re-signed to the UFC. They thought his best years were behind him. He had that awful, awful spell back in 2009 when he lost to Fedor, then he lost to the likes of Brett Rogers, and I think he lost to Bigfoot, and he had four losses on the spin, and people had written him off, told him to go and find employment elsewhere, but he kept coming back. He reinvented himself. He went to Greg Jackson's camp in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He tried to adapt to this new way of fighting, to try and reinvent himself. Still, people poured scorn on it. And when he lost to Anthony Johnson, of all people, back in 2013, again, there was another nail in his coffin. But look at it, five wins on the spin. We're looking at the greatest comeback in mixed martial arts history, one of the greatest fights of all time, against a guy that, personally, I really didn't see him beating Travis Brown. I'd seen footage of them sparring before, and to be honest, it looked like Brown had him on toast. So I was really amazed when that happened. I guess the question is, goodness me, could we be looking at Andrei Arlovsky challenging for a heavyweight title in late 2015 or 2016? Pinch yourself, Simon, because I don't believe it.
Well, if anyone had said that to you at the turn of the year, the men with the white coats would have been round and carted you off. So, you know, it's quite incredible how things can turn around in this sport. And, you know, this was a guy who was, it was sort of general consensus was that his chin had gone, you know. That knockout against Fedor was one of the most spectacular heavyweight knockouts I've seen, where he jumped in and Fedor hit him in midair and absolutely sent him flying. It was, and since then he's had a fair few knockout defeats, but he took some serious punches from Travis Brown, and okay, he got floored by one of them, but you know, he got back up and he won that fight decisively. I mean, the one thing about Andrei Arlovsky, and he's had it since his title run, really. When he had his title run, he was pretty strong, and he come from a combat sambo background. That was his main background going into the UFC, and he was a submission guy. But he did go off after he'd lost his UFC title. He went off and worked on his boxing, and that boxing has just steadily got crisper and sharper all the way up. That fight with Fedor that we just mentioned, he was outboxing Fedor in that fight.
He
had Fedor in a corner. He cornered him off. Brilliant boxing technique. It was in affliction, so it was held in a boxing ring. He cornered him off. Used really good boxing skills. Was peppered him with punches, and he caught him with a good one. And his eyes widened, and all of a sudden the red mist descended. He thought, "I've got him here," and that was the minute he lost the fight. He flew in. Very hot-headed, and Fedor being Fedor just took him out. But the boxing was the key, and you know, he's gone on, and he's obviously kept working on that. And that was the difference. I mean, Travis Brown is a bigger, stronger, arguably superior athlete to Arlovski. He's younger and fresher as well. But the difference was Arlovski was able to hit Brown almost at will on target. You know, he didn't miss with many punches. When those punches landed, they weren't glancing blows. They, you know, they were solid shots right on the target. And the accumulation of those over a very quick period of time just proved too much for Travis. And, you know, Travis has had a couple of big defeats now, and it's difficult to see quite who they're going to give him next. He was right there on the cusp of title contention. He's had two damaging defeats, so it's back to the drawing board for him. But for Andre, it's fantastic. For me,
let me ask you this, Simon. Yeah. I just want to pick out what you said that about Travis Brown. If I gave you £10, I dusted off the cobwebs from my wallet and passed it over to you, and I said, put money on the guy who has more chance of competing or being the heavyweight title champion of the UFC. Is it Travis Brown or is it Andre Arlovski? Now, today, do you still believe that Travis Brown can't be heavyweight champion? Because I think I could easily see a scenario, if he builds himself back up with two big wins, where he's competing for the title, and I'd still maintain he's got as good a chance as anyone else of being a champion in the big men ranks.
My worry with Travis, I've got two worries with him. I mean, he's 90% there, isn't he? I think
he is.
There's just that little bit that he seems to not quite have. Punch resistance to the real elite strikers is something that perhaps he might not quite have. And the other thing that I'm a little concerned about, he's very long, and I think an elite wrestler, someone like a Velasquez, would probably have him on his backside for 25 minutes. And I think against Kane, because Kane is the yardstick, obviously he's the champion. And anybody who has designs on winning that belt, you've got to compare your skill set up against his, and it's hard to see. I think the only way you can beat Kane Velasquez, in my opinion, is to knock him out. I don't think you'll outpoint him. I don't think you'll out-wrestle him. I think the only way that you can beat him is the way Junior Dos Santos beat him, and that is to catch him clean and knock him out, and probably have to do it early. So if you look at Travis Brown and how he stacks up in that regard, no, I can't see him doing it. He might beat another champion. If someone else was to dethrone Kane, then maybe Travis might have an in. But against Kane, I can't see it. Andre Arlovski, unbelievable as it might seem, he probably has got a game that could potentially beat Kane Velasquez. I don't think he will, because I think Kane is just too good, too fast, too strong. But you need someone who can throw punches and can land clean. And as we saw in the Travis Brown fight, Andre Arlovski can certainly do that. I personally, because people are talking about title shots for him straight away, I still think it's too early. I think he needs to fight Stipe Miocic next. And I think the winner of that is the guy.
So where do we stand in this being one of our favourite fights of all time, Simon? Because for me, it really depends on your own kind of personal taste, because there are lots of people for whom they like to see two guys picking up the kitchen sink, throwing it back and forth, and just duking it out in the middle of the octagon. Me, personally, I like a little bit more finesse. So I do think it was a tremendously entertaining fight with a great story. You know, there are elements of Rocky about the whole thing. But for me, my personal favourite fight remains Gustafsson versus Jones, because that had that little extra bit of finesse, real top, top class technique. A great battle, a great story behind it as well, with Jones as the dominant champion and Gustafsson as a plucky underdog. And those guys produced such high quality mixed martial arts. For me, that still stands tall as probably my favourite fight of all time.
Yeah, I sat down on the train on the way home and thought, okay, what is my favourite fight of all time? And I wrote down about six or seven fights. And I think it really depends on, as you say, what you're looking for. And I think overall, my favourite fight of all time is Frankie Edgar, Gray Maynard 2. I think that that encapsulates mixed martial arts in almost every facet. We saw a bit of everything in that fight. Guy coming back from adversity to win. It was absolutely fantastic. The other fights that I really enjoy are those. The actual fight itself, top to bottom, doesn't have to be fantastic, but it's those ones that produce the real wow moments, or the ones that have you right on the edge of your seat. Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen 1 is one of those fights. It was basically one guy beating the living daylights out of the other one for four and three quarter rounds. But it was the way that it finished, and it was that really, really left me absolutely stunned. Frank Mir versus Big Nog, that submission where he broke Big Nog's arm. That was just incredible. One that I re-watched last night, actually. Everyone talks about Forrest Griffin versus Stephen Bonner in the original Tough finale. The next best fight from a Tough finale, Scott Smith versus Pete Sell. One of the most incredible finishes to a fight I've ever seen. Scott Smith got hit in the liver with an absolutely inch-perfect left hook, and it folded him up like an accordion. The fight looked absolutely finished. He was on his way down. Sell flew in to try and finish him off, and out of nowhere, Scott Smith somehow summoned it in him to, from his toes all the way up to his fist, throw an absolute haymaker of a right hand that absolutely flattened Pete Sell and finished the fight. Both men ended up down on the floor in absolute agony. I think Smith had probably broken his floating rib. In terms of shocking finishes, that's up there. But overall, I think Edgar Maynard 2 is still my number one. But
and I think, Simon, if you do like two guys just duking it out and getting up off the canvas, you've got to give an honourable mention to Chet Congo and Pat Barry, haven't you?
Because
the referee could have stopped that fight 27 times. That was ludicrous. I mean, it's one of those ones where you still can't quite believe what you saw. So if that was your kind of thing, you do just like two guys in there going hammer and tongs, picking up the fridge freezer and throwing it at each other. That was an absolute belter.
Yeah, Diego Sanchez versus Gilbert Melendez is another one. Absolute barn burner of a fight. Gilbert Melendez did not need to fight the fight like that. He did it as much for the machismo, if you like. He did it for the crowd. He could have taken Diego Sanchez down and won that fight in a far less damaging fashion to himself. But he stood toe to toe. It was a matter of pride, and he did the business. The other one is obviously Hunt versus Bigfoot. They fought to a draw. Obviously, Bigfoot got busted for drugs after that fight. But it doesn't take a shine off what an incredible contest that was. There's so many. We could probably do a whole podcast on that.
We haven't even mentioned Henderson versus Shogun, have we?
Yeah, unbelievable.
2011, I think that was. That was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I say, we could go on and on and on. There are so many. Frank Trigg versus Matt Hughes too, which is going into the UFC Hall of Fame. I think Trigg's going in as well as Hughes. So, you know, there's so many. And I think on UFC Fight Pass at the moment, they've done a mini documentary, the best five fights of all time. It's well worth a watch. It's about 40 minutes long, and it's superb. It really is. You can't, you know, there's something for everyone in there. It's a fantastic, fantastic watch if you've got Fight Pass. Let's kick things on to our final two topics as we finish things off on the championship rounds. UFC Fight Night Glasgow, which has now been renamed to UFC Fight Night Bisping versus Lightis, is going to go down on July the 18th. Nine fights have been announced for that card. Tickets go on sale tomorrow as we record it. We're recording on Tuesday. Tickets are going on sale to priority access members on Wednesday. They go on general sale on Friday. It's the first time that UFC has been to Scotland. They've been crying out for this event for a long, long time. Finally, they're getting a card. I think it's a decent card. I mean, how do you see it? I mean, given the market, given it's the first one, I think that's, you know, there's some good fights on that card.
There are some really good fights on that card. And listen, but first and foremost, having Michael Bisping back on these shores is huge news. You're talking about a man that's really been a pioneer of mixed martial arts in this country for so long now. I mean, it seems incredible, Simon, that he actually debuted in the UFC all the way back in 2006.
Yeah.
Which, a decade in the octagon, absolutely extraordinary. And Michael has probably been the unluckiest fighter in UFC history, because he's always just fallen short in those title eliminator fights against the likes of Wanderlei Silva, Chael Sonnen, and of course against Vitor Belfort. And all of those losses had a big asterisk in front of them. The Wanderlei Silva wasn't really a title eliminator, but certainly the Chael Sonnen and the Belfort losses were. And of course, those guys subsequently got popped for PEDs, or in Belfort's case, there was the TRT scenario that kind of played out there. So to see Michael back in front of a UK crowd for me will be a really, really special moment. We haven't seen him since he beat Sexy Yama back in 2010.
I was there, yeah.
And he's often said he wanted to come back. He's been very nomadic since then. He's been in Australia, he's fought in Brazil, he's fought in Canada. We haven't seen him back here. So if you've got no other reason than to go and watch Michael Bisping, possibly one of the last times we'll get the pleasure of seeing him fight on UK soil, then that's why you go and buy a ticket, because that really is a pioneer of MMA in this country. He's a future UFC Hall of Famer, I really believe that.
Yep.
And he's a guy who always guarantees entertainment. I'll tell you what, that fight week will be something interesting for sure.
It'd be great. And, you know, the other thing, his entrances to the arena are always something a little bit
super
special. You know, coming out to Song 2 by Blur, it just fits. And as you say, I mean, to see him back on these shores fighting for the British fans again, I think will be fantastic. And I'll be honest with you, I wasn't sure whether, you know, what sort of reception he might get. You know, there's a big rivalry between England and Scotland. And I asked him the other day, I said to him, what sort of reception are you expecting to get? And he told me in no uncertain terms that he's going to get a great reception. He said he's been up in Scotland. He was doing like a video game signing and stuff like that up in a video game store in Glasgow. And he said they were queuing around the block. And, you know, the response that he's had from the Scottish fans has been fantastic. And, you know, the other thing that he was at pains to say when I spoke to him was, you know, everyone talks about the Irish fans and how great they are. And he's like, well, hang on a minute. You know, we've got the fans over here, you know, the English fans, the Scottish fans, you know, they can generate noise to sort of go alongside any other crowd in the world. It's just the opportunity perhaps hasn't been there. And, he made a point of sort of issuing a bit of a rallying call to the Scottish fans and the English fans who will obviously be going up there to watch as well. Say, look, let's show the Irish how this is done. You know, they can do it over there. We can do it over here. Let's really make an atmosphere of this. And, you know, we've got three Scottish fighters on the card. You know, Joke Holderwood's in action against Beck Rawlings. That's going to be a bit of a grudge match. Those two didn't really get on in the Ultimate Fighter house. And Beck's got quite a spiky personality. And I don't think she'll be too shy in stoking the fires leading up to the fight. You've got Stevie Ray, who stepped in at short notice in Krakow and put in a superb performance to TKO Marcin Bandel in Krakow. He's in there against Leo Mafra. And you've got Rob Whiteford, the flying judoka, the hammer. Obviously, he's been there and done it at elite level in judo in the Commonwealth Games. He's now got his dream of fighting in Scotland. And he's fighting an Irishman. He's taking on Paul Redmond in a featherweight bout. I think that's going to be one of the best bouts of the night for me. I think that's.
And let's not forget Ross Pearson, Simon. Ross is a top level guy. He's fought some big names. He's fought the likes of Diego Sanchez. Of course, he was robbed horribly in that fight. That was an absolute travesty.
Yeah.
Gray Maynard. He's fought Ally Aquinta. He lost there, but he's coming off a big win over Sam Stout. Dennis, he's beaten Dennis Seaver as well. He's fought Cole Miller. He's fought Edson Barboza. He's fought and Cub Swanson, of course. He's fought big names. I think it's great to see him back on these shores, because the last time we saw him was that unfortunate finish in Manchester against Melvin Guillard, the no contest there. I think, Ross, you're always guaranteed entertainment. He still feels his journey's not over at the UFC. He still believes he can get up a level and get in the mix in a sort of title contention. I think this is a good winnable fight for him as well. And one of my favourite fighters as well is also on the card, the Sledgehammer. Ilya Latifi's on there. And you know, if Ilya's putting his gloves on, I'm watching, Simon. So I look forward to that as well. I think it's going to be a really, really good night north of the border.
I think it's going to be good fun. And I don't, you know, I mentioned about the atmosphere and the Scottish football fans are among the best international football fans in the world. Whenever Scotland play in a major international tournament, their fans are quite often the best there. You know, they're right up there. The atmosphere they generate and, you know, the jovial atmosphere that they generate is fantastic. I'm really hopeful that what we're going to see in Glasgow on July the 18th is going to be another Dublin. I think we're going to get something quite special. It's going to be a great event. I'm really looking forward to it. As I say, there's 9 fights announced. I would expect there to probably be 1, maybe 2 more. They normally have between 10 and 12 fights on a card. So, I would expect 1 or 2 more to be added between now and then. But I think it's going to be a great event. And I'm looking forward to going up there for that one. And another event that I'm definitely looking forward to, and I think the whole world is looking forward to, is UFC 189. The UFC released a very, very nice trailer, promo trailer, during the pay-per-view at the weekend to tee up UFC 189. Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. You know, the days where people were saying Conor McGregor doesn't stand a chance, he doesn't deserve this title shot, seem a very long time ago now. They've had the press tour. And anybody who wasn't on board before, I think pretty much, you know, the whole world is on board now. And this is shaping up to be something very special. I mean, have you got any early thoughts on this one?
Well, first and foremost, I just want to doff my cap to the UFC's video team, because that was an extraordinary piece of salesmanship that they put together there. The art direction and production values of that video were absolutely top draw. Just when you thought the hype over Aldo versus McGregor might fade, they drop a bomb like that. I thought it was really spectacular, and it takes a little bit of the pressure off Conor as well, because we've been so reliant on him being on the microphone to kind of sell tickets, and he does it brilliantly, of course, better than anyone else in the UFC. Now they're backing it up with a tremendous piece of marketing as well, and I expect to see more of that nearer fight time. I really did think that was one of the best videos we've seen from the UFC guys. So, yeah, as I say, I'll tap the table for that one. That was superb work. In terms of where we kind of go next on the hype, there's so much between now and then. We've got a long distance to travel before we get to 189, but I certainly think that as time goes on, doubt is creeping into the minds of the people that said McGregor hasn't got a chance against the greatest featherweight of all time. And I think that as an event will be, even if we have New York, I still, and New York does get signed and we have an occasion at Madison Square Garden, I think Aldo McGregor is going to be so electric on the night. It's going to be a real seismic occasion in the history of mixed martial arts. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing that is so often forgotten about this event, there's another world championship on the line on this card. You know, Robbie Lawler is taking on Rory McDonald in a rematch as well. You know, let's not forget that. This is going to be a great event. I'm really looking forward to it. I wouldn't be at all surprised if the UFC bring primetime out of the cupboard and do a primetime for this. It's been a while since they've done one. I have a feeling they may well do one for this. I think, you know, they're giving this the big push. They've done the world tour. They're doing these sort of ultra high level promotional videos now. I think the next natural thing for them is to wheel primetime out, get the primetime cameras in. You know, the simmering rivalry between the two is already there. We've got the backstory. We know quite a lot about both fighters. Let's take it another level. And then, you know, this I think is going to be the biggest pay-per-view of the year, without doubt. I mean, 187 that we've just had was fantastic. And top to bottom, it's going to take some beating in terms of the quality of the fights. But, you know, in terms of, the headline attraction and what it brings, and the fact that I think we're going to see people who perhaps aren't even regular UFC fans and aren't regular mixed martial arts fans, I think they're going to take an interest in this, because it's one that is beginning to transcend the sport. And I think the more the UFC invests in this and the more they push, I think the bigger the returns are going to be. And I think, you know, whether it rivals UFC 100 in terms of pay-per-view numbers, I don't know. The market's changed quite a lot since back then. But wouldn't surprise me if it was up there. I think it's going to be a fantastic event, and it's going to be my first trip to America. I'm actually going to that one. I'm beyond excited for it.
Well, I hope the buffet tables can withstand the assault they're going to get from you there, Simon.
Oh yeah, don't you worry about that. Yeah, it's going to be great. And the biggest thing for me is, or the biggest thing I have to contend with is having never travelled long haul before. I'm flying back on the Sunday, so I was thinking about staying out there for the tough finale, but it's just not feasible because I've got Glasgow's the following weekend and fight week starts almost straight away. So I'm basically kissing goodbye to my wife and daughter for 2 weeks. And I think I'm staying at Heathrow for a day, and then I'm flying straight up to Glasgow, where I'm going to have to fight off jet lag for the first time in my life while in Scotland. So that could be an interesting one.
Well, if you need any tips, Simon, you know, just to pick up the phone and call John Morgan at MMA Junkie, because that guy lives out of a suitcase. He's travelling every single day of his life. So
he's a machine. I've already arranged to meet up with him for a beer in Vegas. So I'm going to definitely pick his brains for some tips.
That blue shirt of his has become a brand of its own, hasn't it? Ringside at every single UFC event and weigh-in. He just doesn't miss a thing.
Yeah, no, he's top man as well. I met him out in Krakow, and he's a lovely guy, and he's superb at what he does. You know, we need more people in the sport like him. He's a good lad. I look forward to catching up with him in a few weeks' time. Right, I think that pretty much wraps us up. First show back for a while. If you want to send us any feedback, drop us a tweet. I'm at Simon Head. Ralph, you are?
At Ralph Welsh MMA.
Hashtag it with Championship Rounds, just so we can see it. And if there's any questions that you want us to answer for next week's show, please do ping us some questions, and we'll try and feed those in as a round 5 topic each week. That's pretty much it for the show this week. Enjoy the fights, and we'll speak to you soon.